Welcome to the IRIS podcast. This talk was recorded at Critical Skills for Critical Times conference and workshop organised by Murray Collaborative Learning Network, held at Murray College, 17th of March 2011. Setting the Scene for Change by Richard Murray, Senior Economic Advisor, Scottish Government.
It's quite a vague title. I actually was given this title, and I think it's maybe a lesson in future in terms of just take a title at random and then kind of work around it and see how you can weave in the messages that you were going to say within the title. And setting the scene for change, I think within the context of today, what I'm going to talk about is my day job, which is looking at the macro economy, how Scotland and the UK is performing, but also sort of moving slightly out with my comfort zone and actually linking that in within the public finances and how that ties in with the challenges that we're all facing going forward. Okay, as I'm sure you all remember, just over 2 and a bit years ago, we experienced one of the deepest downturns, global downturns in recent memory. In the middle of 2008, nearly every economy across the world fell into recession. What started in the US subprime market quickly spread to international financial markets, and then with the collapse of Lehman Brothers, quickly fed through into the real economy, and nearly all credit channels froze, and businesses, financial institutions and the like suddenly experienced real difficulty, and hence the sharp downturn. What this chart shows, how synchronized the downturn was compared to previous recessions we've had in the UK. In the early 90s, early 80s and the mid 70s, what we saw was that other economies were actually doing okay, whereas while the UK was facing recession, whereas 2008, what was particularly unique was that nearly every economy across the world experienced a big sharp decline. And that has bearings on the recovery in terms of why we might not have seen the sort of export-led recovery that we hear so much about, and the fact that a lot of the other economies are actually experiencing a collapse in demand as well. So actually it's not been easy to export a way out of recession. So where does Scotland fit into this? Well, Scotland fell into the recession like nearly every other economy and experienced 5 quarters of falling output. This chart shows where we are in the OECD league table of declines in output during the recession. So pretty much mid-table. Hopefully we're Aberdeen. We'll hopefully be in a few weeks' time. Certain economies, you can't read on the far side. We've got Iceland and Ireland that were really hit with the global financial recession, and then latterly, particularly in Ireland, the collapse in the housing market. On the other extreme, Australia, New Zealand, a lot of these economies were relatively insulated from the global recession and experienced very small declines. So Scotland was around about the middle in terms of scale of decline. Output fell by just under 6%. That doesn't sound a lot, but in value terms, it's an awful lot. And if you ask most businesses, it's an awful lot. What parts of the economy were most affected? Well, unsurprisingly, the financial sector was really badly hit. Our banks, RBS, we all know about RBS and Ichbos, now part of Lloyds Banking Group. But wider sort of business services were really affected. And indeed, business services and finance accounted for about 40% of the fall in output in Scotland. That is very unique in previous recessions. It's tended to be led by the manufacturing, the production side of the economy. But that was quite unique in terms of it was business services and finance that really took the brunt of the decline. Construction and manufacturing both experienced pretty sharp declines as well, but not to the same extent as business services. So what did that mean for the UK public finances? Well, during a recession, unsurprisingly, what we find is that the tax receipts to the Treasury decline quite sharply as businesses reduce their activity, as businesses go to the wall. Generally, tax revenue to the Treasury declines quite sharply. And there, as highlighted by the red dotted line, the decline in the revenue that's been received. But at the same point, governments tend to spend more in recessions. For two reasons. One is because during recession we tend to have more people unemployed, so therefore the sort of payments in terms of on the welfare side tend to increase. These are technically called automatic stabilisers. They stop income levels falling below a certain level to make sure that actually, even in the worst case scenario, income levels are propped up to some extent in the economy. But also we had the fiscal stimulus measures which increased government spend, the most obvious one being the reduction in VAT for the year, down to 15%, seems a long time ago, but it did fall to 15%. So what that has done is that has widened the difference between what the government spends and what the government receives. And that the shortfall is made up through government borrowing. What I would point out, and this is a point that's maybe slightly missed, is that even before the recession, what we see is that the government, UK government, was spending more than it was receiving in tax revenue. So during the so-called boom years, government was spending beyond its means. on that. The UK government, and by default, the Scottish government and others. So the tax base wasn't sufficient to prop up what the level of spending we'd become accustomed to. So this gap between the revenue and expenditure is made up by borrowing. Borrowing has increased sharply for the UK since the onset of the recession and peaked in the last financial year, 2009-10, at just under 11% of GDP. Going forward, the net borrowing is forecast to ease slightly, but what's important to note is that each year that's adding into our national debt. So our debt each year is getting larger and larger, and our national debt is forecast to peak at around about 70% of GDP. So what does that mean? Well, it was only a few years ago that the UK government had a sustainable investment rule and a target of 40% in terms of our debt. So in effect, our debt is almost twice the level that we deem to be kind of prudent and the level that we would like to operate. And of course, that debt needs serviced. So that's an increase in the payments that the government has had to make. Interestingly, in 2009-10, for every £4 spent, £1 was borrowed. So that just gives you a scale of how expenditure had outstripped the sort of tax base that we become used to. And that in 2009-10, that's the highest borrowing outside of wartime. So, you know, just to give you a scale of the challenge there. But as pointed out before, even before the recession, the borrowing was, net borrowing was increasing each year. To get slightly technical for a moment, we can look into the different types of borrowing. What we can split that into the cyclical, what's defined as cyclical borrowing, and what's defined as structural borrowing. Cyclical basically means the type of borrowing that's linked with the economic cycle. So during boom times, you expect that to be in surplus because we have additional revenues, and in recession, we expect it to be negative. So that's just moves with the cycle as government spend tends to increase during recession and decrease during boom times. Structural is the more difficult and challenging part. Structural is this fundamental gap between the tax base and government expenditure. And this is the tax base during kind of normal economic times, okay? So you're stripping out the peak and the trough in the economic cycle. And what we see is that in the kind of orange, it's red on this, but it's an orange on the large chunk of it is structural, which is this gap between the permanent tax base and the actual government spend. So two-thirds of the borrowing is down to structural. And this structural gap has increased pretty sharply as a result of the recession. Why is that? Well, the recession has led to a lot of not just temporary lost output, but permanently lost output. Firms that have gone to the wall, sectors that maybe will not return to the same level of activity as beforehand, thinking in particularly within the financial services and the banking side, a lot of the financial innovation in the past decade isn't seen as innovation as now, and a lot of these markets have really frozen up and activity isn't going to take place. So some of this output is permanently lost. And what the recent estimates are around about 4 to 5% of output in the UK economy has been permanently lost. So that's added to this rise in the structural gap, so the permanent gap between what we spend and what we receive in terms of tax revenue. So the UK government post-election came in and slightly changed the timetabling for the fiscal consolidation. They didn't so much change the broad plan, as you can see. This is so we've got the latest plans that was outlined in the Office of Budget Responsibility in November compared to March 2010. So that's in the previous administration's plans. So there wasn't a huge amount of difference in terms of getting this budget deficit back to balance, except for in terms of the timing. So they've brought forward some of the cuts rather than actually necessarily the scale of the cuts. What that suggests is that by 2014-15, we will now be in a budget surplus rather than a deficit, so we'll have addressed those issues. Of course, how is the government making up this deficit? Well, 80% of it is through spending cuts, and 20% of it is through increases in taxation, VAT up to 20%. We've had a slight play about with some of the allowances that basically means that we're all paying more income tax. So that's the balance. So it's an 80-20 balance, which is why we're having such a challenging time in terms of identifying spending priorities. How does this affect Scotland? Well, over the next spending review period, the Scottish government's budget is expected to decline 11% in real terms. So that's stripping out inflation. 11% in real terms. And as this chart highlights, big chunk of it is front-loaded. 6% of it is due in 2011-12. So there's the priority, whereas as it's getting towards the end of the spending review period, the scale of the declines are slightly less. Certain parts of the of public spend have been protected more than others. Health spend that's been relatively protected. even though it's an area which has fairly high cost inflation, so they would argue that not necessarily the case. Whereas other areas have taken a big hit. One of the particular elements of the budget that's taking a hit is capital spending, which is due to fall by 36% in real terms over the spending period. So a huge reduction in certain budgets, in real terms, with inflation just over 4%. So with real cost pressures at the same time. So it's a real challenging outlook. So after 2014, are we all good? Unfortunately, we're not. These implications, this chart needs a bit of explaining. These kind of budgetary implications will actually last more into the medium to long term. What my colleagues have produced is sort of forecasting beyond this sort of spending review period to see what the future might hold for public spending in Scotland. And what they're assuming, and this is a big assumption, not necessarily a wrong assumption, but they're assuming that going forward, UK public spending increases in line with the rate of the economy, which doesn't seem a bad assumption given the fact that we talk about this permanent gap between income and tax revenue. So this idea that it's more closely aligned with the performance of the economy. So assuming that the UK economy returns to its normal long-term growth rate of around about 2.5%, what this forecast suggests is that it could be until 2025-6 before the total amount we spend on public services in Scotland is back to 2009-10 levels, stripping out inflation. So that suggests a period of a 16-year period of adjustment for getting it. So it's not just the case of getting up to 2014. It's actually more longer term. We're not just suddenly going to flick a switch and spending levels will go back. So I guess this, in terms of the context for today, this is very much along the lines of we need to think medium long term rather than just short term fixes within this. So, but I mean, this is purely illustrative. The 16 years could be less if the economy performs stronger, if we bounce back and do well, or it could be longer if the economy doesn't perform particularly well. So that ties in quite nicely with where we are just now, the stage of the recovery. This chart shows the fall movement in Scottish GDP and UK GDP throughout the recession. As you'll see, very similar trend, which is not surprising given the interlinkages between the two economies. Scotland emerged from recession at the end of 2009, with the recovery kind of accelerating in the middle part of the year. But as I'm sure you'll all be aware, that within the final quarter, the adverse weather and a number of other factors resulted in a fall in UK GDP by 0.6%. Now, we don't have data yet for Scotland, but looking at that trend, there's nothing to suggest that we'll be anything different. Last time I tried to drive up the A9, there was plenty of snow. So I'm thinking that the Scottish economy will just be as badly affected by the adverse weather as the UK. However, we've got more up-to-date information in terms of January, February, and some of the business surveys are actually pointing out that this temporary disruption because of the weather is just that we've actually seen things start to pick up in the first couple of months of the year. But what the adverse weather has done, which is a real pain from an analytical point of view, is that it's made it very difficult to judge the underlying strength of the recovery, whether we're into the stalling territory, not double dip, but the stalling territory, or whether or not we're actually going to just kind of see a bounce back throughout this year. On the Scottish labour market, you'd have seen there was quite a few splashes in the paper this morning around what was happening with the latest figures. Well, the Scottish unemployment is now 8.1%. Considering it has moved down from about 9% 6 months ago, that is seen as a marked improvement, and rightly so. People are highlighting this as a positive news story. But you just need to cast your mind back to before the recession when the unemployment rate was 4%. So unemployment is still double what it was pre-recession levels. So there's your evidence for the effects of the recession still being felt. The improvement in the last 6 months masks a variety of things. What we've seen is a rise in youth unemployment, which is particularly worrying. What we've seen is a general trend for part-time work rather than full-time work, which again, that's going to depress income levels within the economy. So although there has been some welcome improvements, the labour market still is in a very fragile position. And going forward, the concerns are around not just the public sector job cuts, but also with rising inflation and the like, that whether there leads to firms are giving pay increases rather than actually increasing the level of employment. The latest independent forecasts for the Scottish economy suggest a very much a gradual recovery. This year, in 2011, we're expecting growth of about 1.7%, with growth closer to 2% in 2012. What this chart shows is that in terms of the level of output, that we could be possibly into 2013 before the level of output in the economy is back to pre-recession levels. Now, that's quite a period of adjustment. So if you look at the previous chart on the labour market, that's why there's 8% of people unemployed rather than 4%, because there's still a lot of slack in the system. We still aren't back to pre-recession levels of output, and won't be for, for quite a period of time. Now, I can't do a presentation without talking about risks. And there's significant risks. I've limited to three, but there could possibly be about 10 risks. You mainly on the downside, but I shall limit them to three. The impact of fiscal consolidation. This will affect the economy through a number of different channels. The scale is unclear, but what we know is that, well, on the sort of government contract side, that the big reduction in the amount of spend by government and agencies on contracts. So that's affecting private suppliers. We know that there's going to be reductions, and there already has been reductions in public sector employment. That's going to impact the overall levels of income within the economy. But more generally, one of the issues, and it's been particularly an issue up in this part of the world with the RAF bases, is the impact it has on confidence and the uncertainty over what the actual impact will be. What we're getting from various sources is that confidence, both in businesses and consumers, has been affected by this kind of underlying uncertainty as to what quite the shape and form of the cuts will be and when they will fall. So that is having a downward weight on the strength of the recovery. We've got inflation running at just over 4%. Given that pretty much wages have been flat for the last few years, in real terms, most people have, by the end of this year, their real incomes will have been squeezed by about 10-12%. So, and the governor of the Bank of England said that it could be a period of about 6 years of pretty much flat wage growth in the UK. So that's pretty unprecedented pressure on incomes and by default on consumer expenditure within the economy. So that's a real sort of downside risk to the strength of the recovery. And we've got in the euro area the sort of sovereign debt fears with Greece and Ireland being bailed out, daily speculation over Portugal. Why does that affect us? Well, the euro area is our main export destination. If we're going to have this export-led recovery, taking advantage of the fall in the sterling, which is still about 20% below pre-recession levels, we need our markets to be growing. And with the euro area looking, well, still highly uncertain, then there's an issue there. And developments in the last few days in Japan, obviously the focus is primarily on the humanitarian and the nuclear implications. But Japan is one of the most highly indebted countries in the world. It's the third largest economy. It's highly indebted. It's going to have to spend a huge amount of money reconstructing the economy. It has raised fears in the markets. The sovereign debt issue might not just be in the euro area. There is a potential that Japan could face issues going forward. And, you know, with all respect to Greece and Ireland, they're very small economies. Japan isn't. So the impact on the global confidence could be much more marked if that's the case. Just to sum up on a slightly cheerier note, the Scottish economy I think it's fair to say it's in the early stages of the recovery. There have been some positive signs. Certainly the worst of the recession's over. We're starting to see the labour market improve gradually, but the effects are still being felt. There's no doubt about it. Through cost pressures, through higher levels of unemployment, particularly for the youth unemployment, that's a major concern. And there's still a huge amount of uncertainty. But what's fair to point out is that the uncertainty is not just on the downside, it's also on the upside as well. That if, you know, just a few months back, the US administration introduced another fiscal stimulus, and that by default raised everyone's expectations and hope that things were actually going to look pretty bright in 2011. So it's not all on the downside that there is a chance that things could be better than we thought. Even if that is the case, on the public finances side, the likelihood is the recession will feed through for a number of years. So it's not just the spending review period. We're actually looking probably over a sort of 10-15 year period that we're actually going through that adjustment. And that means that we're actually going to have to make some big decisions over sort of long-term solutions rather than just kind of how do we get through the next few years.
This recording is copyright of IRIS 2011. It may be reused under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 2.5 UK Scotland license. Go to www.iris.org.uk for more information.